49 to St. George's Hill. A ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to Diggers. So we come.
Hello and welcome. This is Radio Free Kanata, the official voice of the Republic of Kanata. I'm your host, Kevin Annett, and with me is my co-host, Ryan Gable. We broadcast live every Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time at bbsradio.com/Radio Free Kanata. And we are archived at the official website of the Republic at kanatarepublic.ca and at itccs.org, which is the website of the Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State. The Republic of Kanata was lawfully proclaimed and established under the common law on January 15th of this year to replace the criminally convicted regime known as Canada and the Crown of England and their corporate sponsor, the Church of Rome. But Kanata is wherever in the world free and sovereign men and women are reclaiming their world and its wealth from criminal corporate regimes. Kanata is a vision and now a growing reality, a nation of many nations united under a new common law jurisdiction. And Radio Free Kanata is our platform and voice to inspire, to educate, and to actively mobilize our people to establish their own liberty. Today on Radio Free Kanata, we will be digging deeper into the roots of the criminal regime we are disestablishing by looking at how cult ritual and symbolism govern the actions of church and state in Canada and around the world. And we'll be using this knowledge to confront and stop child trafficking and tax revenue fraud across our nations. We're joined in this discussion once again by Dean Clifford, a common law warrior who will be calling in from southern Manitoba a little bit into the show. As part of today's show, we'll also be receiving a report from the Republic's grand jury investigation that's now operating in Vancouver to uncover and document present-day child trafficking and murder in that part of the world. 1 year ago, at Easter of 2014, I stood outside the oldest Catholic church outside of Italy in Maastricht, Holland, where I, along with a lot of other people, posted a proclamation on the church door. That proclamation legally and spiritually disestablished the authority of the Church of Rome and released all Vatican and Crown officials from any allegiance to those bodies. This action enforced a common law court order of the previous year by which Pope Benedict, Queen Elizabeth, and other church and state officials had been convicted of crimes against humanity. Crimes that occurred and still go on across Canada, America, and the world. 1 year later, humanity has been slow to act on this striking away of the shackles that have bound them for millennia. People's mental slavery runs deep. And so we're going to discuss why this is and what can be done about it with someone who has researched the cultic power of church and state, my co-host, Ryan Gable. Welcome, Ryan. Welcome back.
Hey, Kevin, it's really great to be here. I'm so happy to be a part of this and finally be able to have a platform that's uniquely specific in uncovering the things that we're discussing on the show. I'm really happy to be here. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. It's always good to be on with our growing audience. I was looking at the statistics, and we're definitely climbing up into the hundreds now, and people either listening in daily, whenever we broadcast, weekly, I should say, in the archived shows at kanatarepublic.ca. So anyway, it's the theme today at being Easter. I thought we should follow up on some of the stuff we went into last week and in our own discussions. And what I'm going to do is for the next 20 minutes or so have kind of a dialogue with you about what you know about, for example, the cultic significance of Easter and how it is that these crimes by church and state occur in a very different way than we would possibly imagine, because of the cultic and symbolic significance of these things are one thing to us and another thing to the people doing them. So let's talk a bit about that, if you can comment about any of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've written two books about the subject, and I cover it specifically. It's kind of the underlying theme on my radio show that I do, The Secret Teachings. One of the main things to understand is that it's really a question that's difficult to answer directly. It's something that has to be dived into, and if you really want to understand the so-called cultic significance of certain days, holidays, or ancient holy days, you really have to dig into the mythology of it, look at the symbols, look at the parables and the allegories and the stories of which all of this stuff comes from, and understand that it's not all sinister, it's not all nefarious. There's a lot of light that's involved, but that light is sometimes distorted. And one of the things that's really important to understand is the concept that I've come to realize, and I think find that I'm a part of myself, is this belief in duality, the opposing forces of dark and light. And the opposing forces of dark and light in and of themselves, if you isolate them, one might seem like it's a little bit evil in the traditional concept, and one might seem like it's good, the concepts of heaven and hell, the concepts of God and the devil, or Satan and God. But these are the concepts of dark and light, and as these concepts, the two opposing polarities, come together, they form a sense of unity. It's just like the Trinity. It's the Father and the Mother coming together to create the divine child, if you will. And esoterically speaking, Kevin, all of us, all of humans, animal species, everything, we are all divine children of the Heavenly Mother and the Heavenly Father. But in order to understand that, I think we have to kind of separate ourselves from mainline religious institutions, dogmas, and rigid beliefs, and we have to really begin to look at things from an unbiased and unfiltered perspective if we really truly want to have a grasp on what's going on. Now, if you really go into the deep occult aspects of the Mother, the Father, the Trinity, that they, you know, a lot of Christians run around talking about the Trinity. They really don't know the origins of the Trinity and how the Trinity is represented symbolically throughout thousands of cultures over the ages. If you go back and you look at the Mother aspect of the Trinity, the goddess symbolism has been around much longer than the Father symbolism, and this is why we have to understand the goddess, because if we don't understand the aspect of the goddess, what we have, and I think you'll agree with me, Kevin, is we have mainline institutions, both religious and political, and I think you'll agree that it is a very male, energetic, dominant, rigid society that we live in that strongly oppresses the female energy. And this really has nothing to do with sexual qualities as much as it has to do with spirituality. So we have religious institutions that promote this divine, fatherly image of God, the Father, while opposing the female goddess, who over the centuries, thousands and thousands of years, has always been revered as the Mother, because the goddess, the woman, the female, is the one who gives life, who gives birth, who nurtures life, providing for the child. And the way in which we suppress that today has suppressed the life-giving qualities of that spiritual energetic aspect, and therefore we have a distorted image and a distorted version of what reality really and truly is.
Right, and I just one point on, just to jump in for a moment, Ryan. The way that, say, the Church of Rome has taken the goddess image and subordinated it, turned it into the image of Mary, who, yes, brought the Son of God into the world, but she was then subordinate to him and was simply a channel for this male who came in. And in fact, a number of popes, including the so-called reformer, the guy who's in now Pope Francis, has reaffirmed the belief in the Catholic Church that God is male and that you cannot be a clergy unless you're male because of that. So I guess right. This is along long lines of what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You have a very male-dominant society with the oppression of the female energy. One of the things that I use as an example is, I even since I've been a kid, before I understood or researched any of this, wrote or got on the radio, I used to love Egyptian mythology. And in Egyptian mythology, if you study the goddess Isis, a queen of heaven, as she's called, you'll find that there are depictions of her, and in stories, she's represented with both black veils and black robes or black gowns, and also white gowns and white veils and white robes. The black veils symbolize when she is angry, when she is upset, when she is depressed, and the white robes and the white veils represent when she is happy and when she is providing life. So there's two different polarities of the same female energy. If you go a little bit deeper, you'll find that this goddess symbolism, and this is what relates to Easter, this goddess symbolism is really the basis for all of our what we call holidays today, which what we call holidays are really ancient pagan holy days. That's where the words really come from. If you look at the wheel of the year, the witch's calendar, for example, the winter solstice in December, which is the darkest part of the year before the sun is born on December 25th, you know, there's a whole astronomical connection there with the death of the sun for 3 days, the death of Jesus for 3 days, the death of the Japanese goddess Amaterasu, who actually died and was placed in the cave and resurrected 3 days later and then brought life back to the world, just like Jesus, the same story told over and over again. If you go around the wheel of the year from the winter solstice to the midway point between the winter and summer solstice, you find the spring equinox, which we just had about two right. weeks ago. Now, the name of the spring equinox, Kevin, is actually called Ostara, O-S-T-A-R-A. And there's a pre-Christian goddess in Europe called Estare, which is right. spelled almost exactly like Easter. This is where that symbolism comes from. And I'll add one last thing. There's a Babylonian goddess, which I found was fascinating. Her name is Ishtar. She's the queen of heaven as well. Right. And during the springtime, she would come down from the heavens in an egg, which represents the womb. Whoever would go find the egg would get a special reward. And this is the origins of the Easter egg hunts.
Right. No, it's also familiar, and it's like almost the repeating of the same belief system with different verbiage. Now, in order to apply to the work we're doing, I wanted to, because I've had this message sent to me by a number of emails, people want to know, why is it when the darker aspects of this thing happen, when there's actual satanic sacrifice of children on certain key dates, how is that, why is that being done on those dates, and what is the understanding of you know, the significance of killing children on those dates?
Well, again, I think there's a little bit more to know, but to simply address that question, you know, over time, the knowledge and the worship of the mother, as I've stated, has been overtaken by a darker force. Some might call it Satan. There's other names for it, such as the Roman Saturn or the Greek Kronos, who was the god of time, who in the mythology would actually speed time up and watch the flowers and plants and humans die because he was immortal. He was also a god of agriculture. He carried a scythe and was known as Father Time or Death. That darker force, which is the Saturnistic force, that wishes to suppress the natural abilities of mankind for selfish purposes, for greed, for power and control, the people that worship these deities in the name of good, these are the true false prophets, these are the deceivers. What they do is they take this information, and by withholding it from the rest of the people, they take a very, very important understanding of the days, for example, that are used for the spring equinox, Ostara, or the winter solstice, or Yule. These are days to worship nature. These are days to honor the mother. And they take these specific days and these specific dates, and in a type of satanic way, as in a child is the greatest gift from God, how some Satanists, which is another word that I don't like to use, but some Satanists will murder children as a way to kind of spit in the face of God's greatest gift. What right. we have is they will use these cultish days, if you will, these occult days, as a way to sort of suppress, oppress, and spit in the face of the nurturer and the giver of life that is the goddess.
Right. Now, you know, the thing that we found, for example, one of the recent stories coming out of Rome, or insider report of children being sacrificed during ancient Roman rituals, festive days, and at the end of March, Terminalia and Feralia.
Yes,
these have great significance. I mean, I'm looking at the list of some of the Italian families: the Farnese's, the Orsini's, the Aldobrandini's, the Borgias, the Medici's, the ones who've been around for centuries. Are they? Is there a specific Roman aspect to this? In terms of these crimes we're talking about?
Well, like I said, one of the Roman gods is Saturn, and that's actually where we get the name for the holiday called Saturnalia, which is what we right. celebrate as Christmas today. I think the Roman aspects of it have been passed along much more than the Greek aspects, simply because the Roman, if you look at Roman agriculture, Roman architecture, Roman beliefs in general, they have really been the foundation for what we believe in today. I mean, even Washington, D.C., the architecture is modeled after old Roman Colosseums and the Pantheons and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So there's some aspect of that Roman influence, both religious and socio-political, that has kind of come through today. And I think that has a lot to do with a belief that as Rome was such a powerful, powerful nation, that by mimicking that power, we are able to become very powerful ourselves, as well as the fact that a lot of the families that had run Rome, the emperors, that bloodline still continues down right. the line today through the British royal family, through the kings, through the pharaohs and emperors of old days, into the presidents of the now.
That's, I think, you know, one of the things we're hoping to look at in more detail, how these bloodlines continue, how they're manifesting in the political elites today. We certainly know from the people in Italy who have given us this information how, you know, how obvious a lot of this stuff is. But it's like with the evidence we're bringing out about, say, the Indian residential schools, it's all in plain sight. These crimes are obviously being committed. We know who the perpetrators are, and yet they're in charge. And so it's hard to, you know, go beyond simply talking to some degree about this.
Right. I mean, when these people are the ones that literally control the banking system, they literally control the economy, they literally control what we call the legal system, it's very difficult to maneuver and to function and to work to get justice, to bring justice to these people when they own the very institutions which are supposed to bring an equality to the people. We have to form our own, which is where the common law comes in, I think.
Right. Now, that's actually Dean Clifford is going to be on in a few minutes, and we're going to kind of try to tie that in. One of the things we'll be talking about a little bit today, I'm going to just give a little bit of a report about a group of people working in Vancouver, Canada, on a grand jury investigation into how the child trafficking and murder is going on today. And what's really interesting is, I just have a short thing I wanted to share. From one of the reports that came over our desk this week, there was a witness who, she's a woman who used to work on the streets of Vancouver for many years. And she described being taken into what's called the hooker game in Vancouver, where police basically kidnap prostitutes and use them. And she said when she was taken, here's a direct quote, she was taken by a RCMP officer and military official called Michelson. Well, his last name was Michelson. She said, I was driven to the Hotel Georgia basement, and then I was told, I'll show you now what we do to hookers. He proceeded to torture me with dental instruments, including on my genitalia, and branded me with a cult-style insignia. He then told me, we own you now, and I was put to work as a prostitute to lure other women into the game, unquote. So this kind of branding, this is something we heard about in the residential schools very commonly. Children, I have dozens of testimonies of men and women who said as children they were literally branded with certain insignias by Catholic priests, United Church clergy, and others. Is this one of the symptom, you know, if you don't want to call it satanic or whatever, these child killing rituals and cults, is this common, this kind of insignia?
I've heard stories like that as well. As a matter of fact, I've researched a little bit into the death of Lady Diana, and there are stories that she supposedly told her friends where she went through the same type of initiation where she was essentially branded and she was molested with different types of instruments prior to her marriage to Prince Charles. So that's one of the big stories I've heard. And then researching other stories and you know the results of what came out about Jimmy Savile and other people like that, it seems to be very common. I guess it's kind of like leaving a mark and taking possession figuratively of your victims, and also to remind them that you belong to these people that are committing these crimes, I think.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like working for years in these healing circles. The first thing we do with people is to get them to remember and own what happened to them. And that's really kind of true for all of us. We can't really look at these crimes until we look at ourselves and look at, you know, the trauma or the fear within ourselves that's holding us back from confronting these people in high office who are doing these things.
That's right, Kevin. And as a matter of fact, you know, I haven't had a chance to speak about it on this show, but one of the reasons that my show has been removed from several different networks was because of this exact reason. One of the reasons my show was removed from the Dark Matter Radio Network was because of the previous implications on Art Bell, the radio host, that turned out to be obviously false, but of him molesting children, which was not true. But since I chose to speak about this on the network, they removed me and wanted to censor my show because of that exact reason. And you're exactly right. You have to be able to address these issues that maybe they didn't, maybe they did. Maybe it's subconscious that you are remembering it, but not consciously aware that you have experienced the exact same type of traumas a lot of people have. And you have to come to a realization of that, be honest with yourself to be able to fight this monster that we're face to face with.
Right, and that's something we can't do on our own. There's individual work that needs to be done, but like with anything we do, we have to do it together. And that's one of the reasons, just for folks who are listening, one of the areas in Canada where we're having the best success is in Ontario. And we have a district convener there who's doing amazing work. She set up, helped to set up 9 branches now. And one of the first things people do is to get to know each other and start talking about their fears. And the fear of confronting the Crown officials, issuing stand-down orders to the judges and the police, how to get the police and every other people on our side. This confronts a basic fear we're all ingrained in, which is fear of authority, especially if you're a Canadian. And Americans don't seem to have that as much, although it's there. But, you know, this is something that we all need to talk about in our work. And so I'm flagging this for listeners as well as we work over the years together, that this is something we've got to take just as seriously as, you know, the so-called bigger issues.
That's right. And I have one last thing to add before we have Dino, and I thought that you might find this very interesting. There seems to be this underlying theme, of course, in a lot of these rituals where blood is consumed. Now, there was a couple of news articles from some colleges who did studies. I think Sanford College was one of the ones who did a study here in the United States. And they showed that mice, old mice that were injected with the blood of younger mice, the mice who had just been born, it actually began to rejuvenate their cells, rejuvenate their organs, and to actually reverse the aging process. Now, what's really interesting about that is esoterically, blood is seen to contain the life force of an individual, Kevin. So by consuming blood, by consuming the blood of Christ, for example, you're able to obtain that life force and live forever. So if you go back, I found this very interesting. I thought you might find it as well interesting because of the bloodline connection. If you go back into the royal family, if you look at somebody such as Queen Mary of Teck, she was the mother of King George VI, the grandmother of the current Elizabeth II, they are directly descendant from Dracula's bloodline, the real true Dracula, whose father was a member of the Order of the Dragon.
And right, these, Vlad Tepish, yep.
Absolutely. And this bloodline was actually, there was a book written about this, and it was reported in the mainstream media that the British royal family, who actually is a German family, used to be Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, that they actually, this is the name of the article, British royalty dined on human flesh, but don't worry, it was 300 years ago. Even officially, Kevin, we know that these people ate human flesh and consumed human blood less than 300 years ago. What in the world makes us think that this stopped today? It's been taken undercover in the same way of the Eucharistic communion of consuming the blood, consuming the flesh, and obtaining eternal life. The only difference is we do it with Welch's grape juice and crackers. These people do it with real human beings.
Well, and just so folks know, this isn't just kind of bizarre hearsay. There's 2 eyewitnesses to this happening that we posted their testimonies for a number of, well, 2 years in the case of one of them. A long time, these testimonies have been up at itccs.org. Toos Nienhuis, who's a woman in Holland, who's now part of our affiliated Dutch People's Tribunal, and Anne-Marie van Billenberg, who is a woman who was part of the Ninth Circle ritual network in Holland, whereby members of the Dutch and Belgian royal families were doing exactly these things. So that's all up online. You can verify it. And also we've had inside documents from the Vatican proving this, the existence of the Ninth Circle. This will all be gone into in more detail. And you can find some of that detail at itccs.org. We are near the bottom of the hour. And Doug, I'm wondering if you could play the song and then bring on Dean. I know I just sent you his Skype name. And you can bring him in after the playing of our song, which I thought was appropriate. The song we're going to hear is written by Woody Guthrie, who was, of course, the Depression-era folk singer, one of my faves. And the song is just called Jesus Christ, Woody's take on who the man was. So if you could play that now, that'd be great. ¶¶
Jesus Christ was a man that traveled through the land, carpenter true and brave. Said to the rich, give your goods to the poor, so they laid Jesus Christ in his grave. Jesus was a man, a carpenter by hand.
Thank you, Woody. People often ask why do we play especially Woody Guthrie songs. They say, well, you know, he's telling it exactly the way it is, folks. I don't know if you know Woody very well, but his son Arlo made quite a career out of kind of mimicking some of his dad's stuff. But anyway, we'll talk about Woody Guthrie some other time. I could go on and on. Anyway, we've got Dean Clifford with us. Hi, Dean.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing really well. I'm glad you're back on. I wanted to ask you, you know, kind of carrying on from what Ryan and I have been talking about, like one of the, and I'm telling you, the response to the interviews with you have been amazing. I just talked to two people in Vancouver today who said, you know, we're really inspired by what we've been hearing. Our parents are getting screwed by the Canadian Revenue Agency. What can we do? What can we do to stop the court proceeding against them? Because they put a lien on their house, and yet it all seems pretty fraudulent. So I wonder if we could talk a little bit about some of the nuts and bolts, carrying on from last week, of the way you're educating people to take action. Let's say you're being attacked right now by Canada Revenue, by some kind of dubious court document. What are some of the things you'd suggest to people?
Oh, boy. It's been a little while since I've talked about this kind of stuff. Let's see. You know, and again, a lot of people are having successes with various things that they're doing with Canada Revenue Agency, and other people doing the exact same thing are having no success. I think that's one of the failings of, or what people believe to be the failing of the current truth movement or law movement, is that it almost seems like there's just mixed success. There doesn't seem to be anything that really is like a slam dunk that really makes these people go away, and sometimes they just come back after you anyway, slightly down the road.
What would a slam dunk look like to you? What do you think needs to be done to slam dunk the system?
Well, again, CRA is just a symptom of a bigger problem, which is that you're viewed or deemed as a member of the Democratic Society of Canada. It's a private society where you basically have to follow the rules and regulations of that society, no different than a lawyer has to follow the rules and regulations of the law society, right?
Right.
So Canada Revenue Agency is just a symptom of a much bigger problem, which is people's status and the incorrect presumptions that the government operates off of, which is that you voluntarily became a member of their democratic society, and so you've got to pay your fair share now. You have to contribute to their society because you chose willingly and with informed consent to join them, which you never have. And that seems to be one of the biggest things now for attacking the claim of jurisdiction by Canada Revenue Agency, by Canada, period, is to start asking questions about when, where, and how did I become a willing member of your democratic society? And what obligates me to contribute to your society, to basically pledge my natural wealth to your society? Because that is not my wish. That is not my free will to do so. So asking questions seems to be the best way to really defeat these guys. They're questions that these people can't answer. And we always make sure we ask questions by registered mail. And we always want to talk to the people that are apparently the alleged caseworker or the case management or the person in charge of your file when they're getting a demand or an RTP from Canada Revenue Agency, a requirement to pay, which is just a nonsensical document in the first place. As for specific things, you can always contact CRA and ask them. Is little things that used to have a pretty good effect and still do are very simple things. Like, most people don't realize that when you get a tax notice in the bill, right, or you get a notice of what do they call it again? Notice of assessment. So a lot of people out there, before a requirement to pay shows up, before any liens go on bank accounts, before any lien goes on property, they always get something called a notice of assessment in the mail. And the next question that an informed man should be asking when they have been served with a copy of a notice of assessment is, well, where is the actual assessment? This is just a notice. This is a notice that there's been an assessment done. Well, I want to be sent a copy of the assessment, the original assessment. So I want to see how they came to this conclusion. I want to see how they actually came up with this assessment. And I want to know the name of the assessment officer that personally did the assessment. And you can even ask for his identification, right? So you can ID this individual, like name, birth date. I want to know who this individual is. So when I subpoena him to show up at trial and testify, I'll know that I'm getting the right guy that apparently did this assessment. Well, as soon as you start asking a couple questions like that, they tend to go away immediately because they do not ever want to answer that, because all of these assessments are actually done by a computer. They're not done by an actual living man or woman who has assessed anything. It's all nonsense. They made it all up. There's no actual man or woman behind that assessment, which means it's fraud. And that's the easiest way to prove that it's fraud, is for them to not be able to get back to you and produce a copy of the original assessment, or go down to Canada Revenue Agency in the flesh and demand to see the actual original assessment, because it'll have it'll be numbered. It'll be like an invoice that has a number on it, a numbered document that can be traced back to a specific source, because most notices of assessment people get have no tracker number of any kind on it. There's no way of verifying what the hell they're talking about. And even if you were to pay that assessment, what assessment was it that I just paid for future reference? There's no reference number even attached to this. Everything they're doing is just a complete scam. It's a complete con job. And okay, asking simple questions like that tends to make them go away pretty quick.
Right. Now, you know, under the law, it's a simple principle that fraud vitiates all agreements, or nullifies, if you like. And once you prove fraud, can we just turn our back on the system and walk away from it?
Absolutely. But they're trying to make it difficult for us, obviously, because, I mean, who wants their slaves getting out of the cattle corral, right?
Uh-huh.
And fraud, you can't just claim fraud either. You can't just say that's fraud. You got to be able to back that up with something by way of an affidavit. And you have to actually let them know what type of fraud it is that you're a victim of. Like, were the facts misrepresented to you? Were you coerced? Were you deceived?
Right.
Was everything done without your knowledge and without your informed consent? So those are all things that somebody would want to cover in some kind of an affidavit that they serve on Canada Revenue Agency. For instance, asking CRA, an agent at CRA, get a name of somebody and say, well, can you please specifically or factually point out to me or provide facts or evidence that demonstrate or empirical proof that proves when and how I ever, with informed consent, agreed to any of these obligations. Like, where did this obligation arise from?
Right.
Where did it arise from? Because it's my understanding I was born free of obligation, which means at some point in my life, I had to have done something that then gave rise to this obligation. So precisely what did I do, or what happened, and when did it happen that gave rise to this alleged tax obligation? I want to know precisely when and how.
Right. And, you know,
one question.
What's even more, I think, an even more relevant issue is not simply the money, the taxes, but when our children are taken from us. And that this is what, you know, is a big issue time and again with everyone we're working with. The degree to which children are trafficked and abducted, quote, legally right within the system, using the same method, you know, of not informing people, of assuming that you're, you're not a flesh and blood father or mother, you're a custodian over somebody actually owned by the state. I mean, like, this is something that people need to be trained in to recognize. Otherwise, their children are carted away all the time. And this is, you know, kind of relating to what we were talking about with Ryan, but also this campaign to expose, you know, this ongoing crime of child trafficking in our midst.
Well, wouldn't that be a very, very simple question to ask the Attorney General of your province or the Attorney General of Canada? When, where, and how did my daughter or son become property of the state? That's
right.
One simple question. If they can't answer that, then they're not property of the state. So I don't give a shit about presumptions or assumptions or anything else the court operates off of. If you serve that question by registered mail on any of these parties and default them on it, then all you got to do is claim your son and your daughter back as your own property,
right,
and say, well, I'm sorry, but I asked these people when, where, and how my son or daughter became property of the state. They can't answer that question, which means it never happened. So that's fraud, and that's still my son or daughter. I'm not their custodian. I am their father. They're mine, and I'm taking, I want them right now. Return them to me.
Well, and it says that, of course, in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that people have the right to their own children, and they cannot be alienated from them through any legislation.
Yeah, but what's better to use, because the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is just a declaration, and it's my understanding it's not legally binding upon anybody, but I'll tell you what is legally binding on these people is the International Covenant on the Rights of the Child.
Right.
And that's, so instead of arguing your rights when you go to court or when you're fighting with Canada Revenue, with Child Family Services or whatever child kidnapping services they call themselves in your locality, what you'd want to do is basically let them know what the rights of the child are, which are enshrined in that international covenant that says, no, the child has the right to be with its family.
Just a short question.
The child has the right.
Has that covenant been ratified by Canada? Has it been enabling legislation in Canada, making it law?
As far as I am aware, it has absolutely been ratified by Canada, and it has the full force of law in what people believe Canada to be.
Well, that's good to know. Ryan, you got questions or comments?
I actually do have a comment about that. One of the things in more esoteric occult terms that I wanted to add about the reason in which children are targeted on several different levels, from food to drinks to entertainment to the kidnapping of children through, like, say, the CPS here in the United States. One of the reasons that is when you hear about occultism, where you hear about Satanism, you always hear about virgin sacrifice. And when people think of virgins, they tend to think of like young girls, 17, 18 years old, white robes being laid on a slab of like concrete or something and having their heart cut out, some type of, satanic ritual they've seen in Hollywood. But what virgin actually means is pure, and what pure in reference to the virgin means is young children, the spilling of the innocent blood. You'll actually see this in a lot of movies if you've ever seen the movie Pan's Labyrinth. Pan's Labyrinth is an unbelievably complex occult symbolic movie of the birth and the rebirthing process in relationship to Easter, what we're talking about a little bit ago on the show. You'll even see the symbolism of the female ovaries and the symbolism of the tree that is used that the main character has to go into on her journey. And that same symbolism is actually used in Star Wars when Luke goes into the tree in the forest and he finds his greatest fear. But in that movie, Pan's Labyrinth, at the very end of it, before she's initiated into this royal family that she's a part of, she has to spill the blood of the innocent. And instead of killing the baby, she slits her own, I think she slits her wrist or her hand, and the blood of the innocent spills down into the labyrinth. The innocence and the significance of the virgin sacrifice is the reason in which these people target children. Of course, there's a reason for financial purposes, and some of them maybe sexually are attracted to children, but a lot of this has to do with the power that they obtain and the energy that they obtain through these rituals, through the virgin sacrifice. I just think that that's something that is important to be mentioned.
Right.
Well,
go ahead.
Their intentions to me are irrelevant. I don't care what they plan on doing with kids that they kidnap. They just don't have the right to do it, whether they rape them or eat them or turn them into sex slaves or just steal them from people for whatever reason. It doesn't matter. All of that is completely unlawful and horrible. So it really doesn't matter what they're doing with these kids. They have no right to do any of this.
Here's a kind of a question for you, kind of based coming out of that. There is a standing policy, as people know who've listened to the show and our work, standing policy in the Catholic Church. I don't like to call them Catholic, by the way, because it means universal. It's part of
neurolinguistical programming.
Exactly, where we're taught to think that it's some kind of universal body. Anyway, the Church of Rome has a standing policy that when a child is raped by a priest, it's to be concealed. It's called Crimen Solicitanus, passed in the year 1929 when Mussolini established the Vatican, which is significant. And we're going to talk a little bit about that more. But
I wanted to say the reason that that's so important to understand both what I'm saying and what Dean is saying is because you can come at it from one direction or the other direction, But there's always going to be, if you're trying to inform people, a moment in which, if you come at it from strictly a lawful standpoint, people want to know, well, why would someone do something like this? It's really hard for people to wrap their minds around the targeting of children.
Exactly. And the reason, just so I can finish that point, the reason this is relevant is it's a standing policy. It's like a club rule. If you're going to be a priest, you've got to agree to do this. Every priest is involved in a criminal conspiracy to protect child rapists. Now, legally, what can we do? I mean, if it's a criminal body, it may have trillions of dollars at its disposal, but it's a criminal body. Don't we have the right to go in there and perform citizen arrests on priests? Don't we have the right to seize that those facilities where children might be being harmed? That's kind of a question people keep putting to me all the time.
Well, I think the Irish got it right a couple of years ago. From my understanding, they were walking into Catholic churches in Ireland and dragging the priest out during his sermon on Sunday and just beating him to within an inch of his life right in front of all his congregation when he was, if any of them were found to be molesting children or raping children. So,
well, don't forget, you don't have to have committed it. Being a complicit in a crime means you know about it, but you don't do anything about it or you help cover it up. They're all involved in a criminal conspiracy, whether they're doing it or not.
Well, that's just all police, all lawyers, all politicians, everybody. Every single one of them is involved in a conspiracy because every single one of them has sworn an oath of secrecy, an oath to protect their brothers and their fellow brethren and to cover up crimes and to basically make themselves above the law. This shouldn't be news to people. This shouldn't be shocking to people. I'm shocked if it is. That's just fact. It's just the way of life right now. So the only way it's going to change is if we change it and we just basically get rid of these archaic institutions. We just get rid of them. Leave them.
And that was really what was behind the common law verdict when Pope Benedict, and you know, again, he steps down. The proof is on how these guys act, because there was Sean Brady, the Cardinal of Ireland, two other cardinals and the Pope Benedict have all stepped down when this information became public. And they know they may have all that power, but they know that people might start acting on it.
That's right. And also Pacon stepped down, head of the Jesuits.
He stepped down. And don't forget, folks, that happened this year right after we did that thing. Like I mentioned, a year ago at Easter, a bunch of us went to the church in Maastricht, Holland. We posted this order that basically said, people are not obligated to obey the Vatican anymore because they're criminal conspiracy. And the head of the Jesuits resigns within 3 weeks. I mean, that never happened before in history.
It pretty much speaks for itself. And, you know, another thing that's really important to understand is the history of it. If you go back and you look at the history of the establishment of the Vatican, you look at things like crimen solicitanus or unum sanctum, meaning that only salvation can be found through the church, through the papal. You look at things like that and you really understand the history of it. You look at what was it called, the donation of Constantine, and find out that this is all based on, made up false documents.
Yep.
The institution of the church is not legitimate. It's illegitimate. It's unlawful. It has already been disestablished. It's only being held together by the ignorant faithful. And I don't say that in a negative way. I say that in a way in which people need to become very aware of what they're directing their attention towards, right, because it's actually the very opposite of what they believe it is.
Well, folks in Vancouver should go down to Dunsmuir and Richards at the cathedral there, where we occupied a number of times just prior to the apology for the residential schools. And I remember the cop showed up that day, and we had occupied the church, and the police sergeant came up to me and he said, "You know, you're not allowed to do this." And I said, "Well, why not? It's a taxpayer supported institution. We just went in there to make our point. It's public space. And by the way, they traffic children according to their own policy and protect child rapists. When are you going to arrest these people for that?" I remember the cop looked at me. He looked helpless and then he walked away, literally. And this is the reaction we get all the time. And I was going to say to Dean, you know, the thing that really impresses me about your own witness and work is that you're always pushing the envelope. And just like we did at that cathedral, when you push far enough, the system exposes itself and they do back down. So we don't have to be afraid.
Well, that's the relevant point there, is I continually tell people that worst case, what we have the power to do is to expose these people as hypocrites, liars, and criminals. And at least when they have to drop the veil of they don't have legitimacy. And when that veil is exposed or removed and everybody sees them for exactly what they are, because they have to resort to pure naked aggression, mm-hmm. they're exposed for exactly what they are. And then people are actually like, oh, okay. Yeah. I don't have faith in the system anymore. Now I do understand this is just a complete tyranny. It's just a tyranny outright. They just resort to pure naked aggression at the end of the day, and everything else is just a facade to make it appear as though they were legitimate and had authority, and they didn't. So, okay, at least we now know that is what's going on. This is just plain criminal. It's just tyrants running the show. They have no problem beating us and killing us and raping our family and kicking us out of our homes and evicting us like they have throughout history. And if that's the only thing we're able to accomplish at the end of the day, then that's a very big first step, because at least we expose them for exactly what they are.
Right. People want to follow our work, CanadaRepublic.ca, ITCCS.org. And Dean and Ryan, why don't you announce your own websites?
Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, my website is www.thesecretteachings.info. And my show airs on several networks, including the L&M radio network. We're actually just boosting the station. We're going to be airing 24 hours a day. So if you go to the website, again, thesecretteachings.info, you can find my show. We're going to be airing several times a day, 7 days a week, as well as my archive is available there. I've done hundreds of shows over 6 or 7 years where we've discussed these very issues, as well as dozens and dozens and dozens of other topics. There's so much information, and it's all free, and it's all as close to the truth as I've been able to research. I think that, I don't like to think that a lot of this is real and that it's true, but as the more I research and the more that I dig deep into these elements, you tend to find that what you really don't want to be true tends to be true, and you realize that you've kind of been lied to your whole life. But you just have to have an open mind and look at things unbiasedly and without any filter or preconditioned belief system, and you'll begin to see the world in a very, very different light. Right.
Dean, I know you've got a television show now or something. Tell us about how people can watch your stuff.
Yeah, well, I still got the old time-tested and true website out there, deanclifford.info, which has been around for years now. We make people just a platform for people to access all the videos that we've made available over the years, and including the seminars that I've done, and even the one that I just recently got arrested at before my 16th months of forcible confinement there in incarceration. So deanclifford.info is the main site for that, and we have a new forum that's going to be getting launched right away as well, where we're going to be launching some pretty interesting things, interactive, for people to get involved in and start to become part of the solution to the mess here. That and the new show that I'm doing, I just did one last Monday. It's going to be every Monday now from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, where I am in Winnipeg, and that's on CCN, and that's Conscious Consumer Network. And I've got the links on my Facebook page, Dean C. Clifford on Facebook. I've got links to that on my website. It's not hard to find if you go to YouTube and you look up CCN or Conscious Consumer Network, and if you come and find us, it's easy to find the website. I'm going to have my own page up on there pretty soon, and every Monday for 2 hours, it's a live streaming video, basically like competition to CNN, and I really like what the folks over there at CCN are doing now, because they're trying to build our own alternative media platforms now that compete directly with the lamestream media, the controlled media. So I can't guarantee the quality of the shows at this point. Like I say, I'm still trying to get caught up here and get my life back in order and get my construction company back together. And we'll try to get some good guests on here pretty soon, and we'll just talk about all the same things that we normally do and get more in depth into it and really start to try to get to some more solution-based remedies on how to become active yourself in a limited manner. And just get involved and start being part of the change here to fix this entire mess. So that's what we plan on covering with all our shows.
That's great. And I meant to ask you personally, have you received any, I imagine you have, support and everything now that you're out, but have the authorities been tampering with you at all?
Not that I can tell. There's a lot of people claiming that they have a lot of interference and their phones are getting tapped and all this stuff is going on. I don't know if they are. I mean, obviously, we know they're listening to us all the time anyways. It's been admitted they listen to everybody's cell phone calls, and they listen to everybody's Skype conversations for the most part. And, you know, Facebook is monitoring you 24/7. I don't know if they are, and to be honest with you, I don't care. Go ahead, yeah. Spend all the money you want and all the resources you want, all the manpower you want, trying to uncover the fact that we're doing nothing. Be my guest. Waste all the time and resources you want. It's pathetic. I'm not even going to bother trying to conceal anything I'm doing. There's no point to it. And that's what happens when people are doing things that are right and when yep. you're telling the truth, is you don't need to hide exactly. behind the same layers of bullshit that these people need to hide behind.
Well, that's always been my attitude, too. And I think, you know, it 90% of fear is fog, and people have to realize that through their own experience. So that's good to hear, Dean. I'm really, really glad. Ryan, any other comments? We've got about 4 minutes left here before we do the ending song, which, by the way, I thought would play Imagine by John Lennon, not only because I love the song, but my Kokum out in Edmonton, she's my Cree grandmother, adopted grandmother, Lillian Shirt, told me about 6 years ago when we were sitting around her living room that she had been the one who gave John Lennon the idea for Imagine, because she was doing a camp out in Centennial Square in Edmonton for the rights of her people, and she got a phone call from John Lennon. This was during his sleep-in. Remember when he and Yoko were sleeping for peace in a Montreal hotel room? He called her up, and she began to tell about his, you know, the way their people lived, how they held everything together. There weren't nations. There wasn't religion. And she says, years later, I heard the song, and I thought, oh, I guess he he put into song what I told him, which I thought was quite funny. I don't think he ever credited Lillian Shirt or the Cree Nation for Imagine, but I thought it would be good to play it today. Because it sums up in many ways what we're all about.
Hey, remember that the Reverend Mark Dais, a Roman Catholic bishop, Shrewsbury, a couple of years ago, I think it was last year, he said that John Lennon's song Imagine is misleading the world about the causes of war, and that it's an ill-founded belief that religion is the cause of those wars. I just thought that was so distorted and backwards, it was made me laugh really hard.
Oh, he sounds a bit threatened, the guy, huh?
A little bit, huh?
Actually, religion comes from a word meaning to rebind, tie people up.
Yeah, yeah. They got to protect their institutions. There's no question that's in their best interests. And yeah, everybody out there has to remember that all of us, we all get a lot of our inspiration from other sources. So everybody in the world gets their inspiration from somewhere, even John Lennon.
Yep, exactly. And it's a whole river of people and that whole tradition. You know, in the last 2 minutes, I did want to mention that part of the work we're going to be doing in the West to a lot of the members listening out there is involving more and more Indigenous people. And there's a whole parallel movement in the Indigenous world of people reclaiming their land according to their own traditional tribal laws. This is standing like the Tura Wampum, where there's two people walking side by side in equality. This is what we need to do with one another. We're not imposing anything on Indigenous people. We're trying to partner in the way we did originally when we first came here, not through Crown or Church or any of that. So that's something that maybe we need to keep reminding one another of. So I really appreciate you guys coming on again. I know we'll carry on again next week if you're both up to it. And again, just to everyone listening, take what you've learned, put it into action. Don't wait. You are the leadership. You are the new world coming into being. And so on that note, let's listen to Imagine.